fingers, and it was strange not to kiss her or be able to touch her with his hands and to connect with her only by looking in her eyes. And she wrote him harder, hard enough for it to hurt. And oh, thank you, Lord, that was it. That was what he needed. And he groaned as the pleasure intensified, and then he was coming as she had his arms at his sides and her eyes boring into his. When it was over, and the two of them were breathing a little more normally, she reached back, gripped the condom, and slid herself off him. She moved over to the other end of the couch, looking down, saying nothing. A moment went by. He felt a little delirious. "Thank you," he said. "That was nice." She nodded, but still didn't look at him. "I'd even do it again if you promised not to squeeze my throat so hard this time." She glanced at him and gave him that reluctant laugh. Damn, he could get used to making her laugh. He really could. "You know," he said, easing off the condom and securing the robe so he could talk to her without a big deflating dick distracting anyone, "I usually like to hold the person I just made love to, but I can see it's not that way for you, and I don't want my advances to be unwelcome, even though that concept strikes me as somewhat paradoxical at the moment." She looked down again.
"I'm sorry."
"Sorry? For what?"
"For not... for the way I am."
"Don't you dare apologize for that. I wouldn't change one thing about you." She wiped her eyes. He thought she looked exhausted. Probably he did, too. "So, look," he said, "I get that you prefer not to be touched. But what about my needs? I like to be held after lovemaking." She shook her head and laughed. Damn, but he liked that laugh. "Okay, how about this? You just hold me, and I won't hold you back." He'd really only been trying to get her to laugh again, but she got up, walked over, and sat next to him. Then, with the air of someone about to do something not only dangerous, but also maybe distasteful, she reached out and touched his cheek. The gesture moved him so much that he covered her hand with his own. She pulled her hand back.
"Don't push it."
He laughed, not sure if she was serious or joking, and held up his palms like someone surrendering to a gunman. "My bad, my bad." She nodded.
"Maybe I'll shower now."
"Sure. And when you're done, why don't you take the bed?"
"No, the couch is fine. You take the bed."
"The only way I'm getting in that bed is if you do, too."
"Looks like you'll be sleeping on the couch."
"That's fine. I've slept on plenty worse. Gonna miss you, though."
She got up and started to head to the bathroom, then turned back. She looked at him.
"Was that really nice for you?"
"Hell yes it was. Couldn't you tell?"
"I guess."
"I mean, it was a little unusual from my perspective, but I meant it when I said I'd do it again."
She nodded, but her face turned sad.
"I'm glad. I think..."
But she didn't finish the thought. She just shook her head, picked up the Glock, and walked off. He watched her go, wondering what she'd been about to say, and wishing she'd said it. Chapter 23 Livia turned the shower temperature as hot as she could stand. She used a washcloth to scrub herself with soap, then stood under the scalding water, letting it wash everything off her. She felt confused, but she wasn't sure why. She'd had boyfriends, and though she'd tried to accommodate them by being more normal, the only way she could get off other than by herself was the way she'd just done it with Carl. She was good at trolling for the kind of man who wanted to get rough with her and who she could turn the tables on. But Carl wasn't rough. He was accommodating and kind, but still, it had worked. That was what was confusing her. There were things she couldn't do. What the men had made her do on the deck of the boat from Bangkok to Portland, for one. And because, as she'd learned in college psych courses, negative reinforcement tends to generalize, there were other things she couldn't do as well, and still others she could do, but that weren't comfortable. She could kiss, but didn't really like to, except for Sean, who had been her first all the way back in high school, standing by the snowy swings in an empty playground on her last night in Llewellyn. She supposed she could have kissed Carl. He had obviously wanted to, but she hadn't. What she wanted was exactly what they did. She was glad he'd come. Sometimes it didn't happen because the guy didn't like what she insisted on. That always made her feel crappy afterward, like there was something wrong with her. Or sometimes it was the opposite problem. The guy would come too fast because he liked it too much, which wasn't exactly helpful either. She thought of Goldilocks and the Three Bears and laughed a little. Yeah, Carl was just right, freaked out, but still turned on. She looked at the floor and let the hot water run down her neck and back. She could tell he would again if she wanted, and the way she liked it, too. But it wouldn't be the same. It would feel artificial. It would be artificial. She'd have to try to provoke him, make him angry, to make it real again, and the thought of that made her sad. She'd said so little, and yet he'd understood. Without knowing the details, he'd understood completely, and exactly the way she would have wanted him to understand if she could have imagined what that might be like. The hot water was good. She felt herself starting to relax. She was glad for what happened. After the last few days, she'd needed it, but she didn't want it to happen again. She just wanted to try to trust him. She'd almost told him that right before heading to the bathroom, but then couldn't say it. When she was done showering, she put on a robe and went back to the room. He was sitting on the couch, and though his head was up and his eyes open, she had the sense he'd been dozing. "Better?" he said. She nodded. "I needed that." He smiled. "I'm tempted to ask whether you're referring to the shower or what came before it, but I believe a woman is entitled to her mysteries." She shook her head, liking how irrepressible he was, but not wanting to admit it. "You were right," she said. "I'm not a professional, not like you. Nobody's paying me." She sat at the opposite end of the couch and looked away from him. "I was Thai when I was a little girl. Well, Lahu, but from Thailand. And I was kidnapped and taken to America with my sister, Nasan. She died." "I'm sorry, Labi." Even all these years later, it was hard to talk about Nasan without tears, especially to someone who seemed to understand. And worse, in this case, who was calling her by a name she hadn't heard since she and Nasan had been little girls. So she just nodded and hurried on.
"And Sorm, I'm pretty sure he was behind it. Not the kidnapping itself. That was someone else, and I took care of him. And the people who helped him, or at least most of them. But the logistics, the network, that's all Sorm. What happened to Nasan and me wouldn't have been possible without Sorm. And what's happened to God knows how many other children would never have happened without him."
They were quiet for a moment. Then he said, "You know better than I do, but yeah. And my guy at CIA, whose intel has always been solid before, he told me Sorm's not just a trafficker. In his Khmer Rouge salad days, his specialty was sexual humiliation and rape. Even children, in front of their parents. Like I said, some people just need killing." She knew nothing more true than that.
"Yes."
"But how'd you get so close? I mean, night vision and the Glock? How'd you get all that into the club?"
She told him about Little and the Joint Federal Local Law Enforcement Task Force, leaving out the specifics.
"My lord," he said when she was done, "these state-of-the-art networked security systems are like a wet dream for nation-state actors. I hate to think of where things are going with electronic voting. But what about Sorm? I gather from my guy he's a hard man to find. And apparently, my guy was more right than he knew. Where'd you get the intel?"
"I developed some leads," he laughed.
"One of those leads lend you his Glock?" She didn't like the question.
"What do you mean?"
"Don't get me wrong, you can ride a Z-800 like a pro, so maybe you like big guns, too. But I had a feeling the Glock was something you borrowed from someone, and that you didn't ask nicely."
She realized that despite everything, she was still partly buying the hick routine and underestimating him as a result.
"And you say I am a good interrogator."
"You are, but I suppose I have my moments."
"Anyway, yes. I got Sorm's burner number from someone in his network and tracked it to the club. But you're right. Now that I've had a chance to think about it, I realize he wasn't even there. Why would he be? It was obviously a setup. I just couldn't accept it right away.
Because you wanted so much to kill him. I get it."
She nodded. The feeling of being that close. She realized now she'd gotten carried away.
If Carl hadn't been there to talk sense to her, she might have gone tearing down the hotel stairs and straight into another ambush. She had to keep a tighter grip on herself.
"So a setup," he said. "But for which of us?"
"It's hard to say. I never told my contact where I'd be going in the club. But from what you've told me, your guy knew you were going to hit the VIP safe room."
"Yeah, that's true. I hate to think it, though. A lot of water under the bridge with my guy."
"But there are other possibilities. Everyone has been tracking Sorm by what we believed was a burner he was using."
"That's right."
"So whoever was behind the setup, if they knew about the burner, they also knew exactly where one of us was going to try to hit Sorm."
"You're right," he said. "And there's another possibility. I told you, these days, Sorm is a DIA asset. It was DIA who hired me to take out Sorm's UN nemesis by getting me to believe the UN guy was Sorm himself. So if DIA..."
He got up, walked over to the French doors, and stood for a moment looking out onto the dark beach. Then he turned to her.
"If DIA knows about my CIA guy, they'd know I'd have called him after surviving their Phnom Penh double cross. They'd especially know because my guy made some inquiries throughout the intelligence community once I'd contacted him. Shit, I bet you I know what happened."
He walked back to the couch and started pacing in front of it.
"These intel community types spend as much time spying on each other as they do on America's ostensible adversaries. So shit, DIA probably knows about my CIA connection. My guy's used me for enough work, after all. So when my guy starts asking questions, someone at DIA feeds him false intel. Oh, yeah, we know the mobile number of a known SORM associate. My guy cross-references and creates a map of a telephone network that leads him to the burner SORM is supposed to be using. Yeah, in fact, he even told me SORM doesn't know all our capabilities to explain why SORM would have gotten sloppy with his communication security. Well, yeah, SORM might not know, but DIA does. And then DIA makes sure SORM's burner is located at Les Nuits night after night, right in the club VIP safe room. My CIA guy laps it all up and thinks, bingo, we found SORM. And I thought the same, but instead of SORM, it was a damn ambush."
When you tossed in that flashbang, one of the men yelled, "Grenade," in English.
"He did?"
She nodded. "It doesn't narrow the list of suspects that much, but it's at least consistent with your theory."
"Damn, I didn't even hear." "Too busy trying not to piss myself, I guess. I don't think I'd have made it out of that club if you hadn't been there."
"I'm glad I was, then."
"That's pretty sentimental for you."
She laughed. It was weird how comfortable he made her. "Anyway," she said, "I have another lead."
"Yeah?"
"Udom Likpai, another SORM associate, who sells children out of a shipping container at the Srinakaran Rat Phai night market."
"Well, it sounds like we ought to get back to Bangkok and pay old Udom a visit."
A warm ripple of adrenaline spread through her gut. Likpai was her best lead to that little girl, and to SORM. She was glad to have someone with her to go after him, and a little bewildered by both the notion and the feeling.
"Say," he said, "can I ask you something off topic?"
She nodded.
"You have some kind of martial arts background, Tai Chi or Aikido or something like that?"
The question made her tense, the way his comment about the Glock had. "Why?"
"The way you moved me on the couch. I don't even know how you did it exactly. It didn't feel like you were pulling hard, but away I went. I have a friend who can do things like that, and he's got a big-time judo background."
That was way too close for comfort. "I've dabbled in this and that," she said, remembering how Little had said something along those lines when she'd put a similar question to him.
He laughed. "Yeah, dabbled. But okay, like I said, I believe a woman is entitled to her mysteries. Can I ask you one other thing off topic?"
"I get the feeling nothing is really off topic with you."
"Well, I guess it comes down to how you define topic. But anyway, before, when I said I love the smell of durian fruit, you looked at me strangely. I know most people dislike the smell, but that look seemed like something else."
He really did notice a lot. He would have made a great cop. Durian was Nassan's favorite. There was a long pause. Then he said, "I'm glad you told me." She nodded. And to keep herself from crying, said, If you're right about DIA feeding false information to your CIA contact, it means...
Right, it means my contact ought to be able to tell us who at DIA is protecting Sorm. And if he won't,
then the one protecting Sorm is your contact.
That's right, even though I hate to think it. But I can't call him now. I don't want to power up the phone until we're ready to vamoose in the morning. But I'll tell you what, one way or the other, he's going to have himself some explaining to do.
Chapter 24. Docs slept fitfully. It wasn't the couch. He'd meant it when he said he'd slept, and slept well, not plenty worse. There wasn't even any kind of adrenaline aftermath from the whole crazy night. It was the worry that Kanazaki might have sold him out. He didn't want to think it could be, which meant he had to make sure he wasn't discounting the possibility just because it was uncomfortable. If Kanazaki had turned on him, there would have had to be a hell of a good reason, because the man would know that if anything went wrong, he'd be taking on not just Docs, but Rain as well. And with all due immodesty, there weren't many pairs on Earth you'd less want looking to punch your ticket. Still, Kanazaki himself would make for some formidable opposition, and while that was a sobering notion, it was also such a sad one. Rain didn't trust anyone. Well, maybe he trusted Docs, and his lady, or sometime lady, who knew what was up with them anyway, Rain didn't like to talk about it, Delilah. Rain trusted her. But Docs wasn't built like that. He needed to have people he could believe in. Rain was one, of course, and Delilah, too. Hell, she'd earned it after all they'd been through, though it was also true he could tell with her right away. And the Dalai Lama, well, Vanek Van, the UN guy, but he just thought of him as the Dalai Lama. He was on the up and up, no doubt. And Labi, who, okay, he hadn't known for very long, but with whom a hell of a lot had happened in the short time they'd been acquainted. He trusted her. And Kanazaki. Kanazaki was another. He hadn't even realized how much he'd come to trust the man over the years until just now, lying sleepless on a wee hour's couch at the Paradise Cottages and Spa in Rayong Province, Thailand, when he'd been forced by circumstance to ask himself whether his trust might have been misplaced. At well past dawn, Labi stirred in the bed and sat up. "Hey," Doc said, "how'd you sleep?" She rubbed her eyes.
"Pretty well, actually. How about you?"
"Okay at first, but I've been awake for a spell, trying to decide whether my guy could have sold me out."
There was a pause, then she said,
"Even if Sorm wasn't there last night, he was there recently. My lead was solid."
"I'm glad to hear it, but that doesn't exactly get my guy off the hook either."
"Well, we'll know soon enough, right?"
"Yeah. Speaking of which, we should get... I don't want to call him until we're east of Bangkok and past the choke point of the coastal road, just in case."
There was a pause. She said,
"You've been calling him your guy, but it sounds like he's more your friend."
"Yeah, I guess you could say that, known him a long time."
"I don't think it was him."
"I don't either, but it could have been. I can't afford to be sentimental about it."
"I get that, but I also think... you have good instincts."
He looked at her. She was so pretty in the faint light from outside and naked beneath the bedsheets. He wished he could have walked over and made love to her right then and there, but he could tell she didn't want that. And it wasn't just a question of it being her way or more gentle, which he would have favored right that minute. He sensed the night before had been just a crazy one-off, but not a bad one, not a bad one at all. With luck, what came after it might be even better. He laughed.
"I think that's just self-flattery. You're saying you think I have good instincts because I decided to trust you, is that it?"
"Just because it's self-flattering doesn't mean it isn't true."
"Well, let's hope it is. Like you said, we'll know soon enough."
They took turns in the bathroom and headed out. Back at the bike, he didn't argue, he just held out the key. She almost took it, but then hesitated.
"It's okay," she said. "I'll ride and back." It was such a small thing, but at the same time he could tell what a concession it was for her, and that she was doing it for his sake, and maybe so she'd seem more normal to him, whatever the hell normal might mean. He shook his head and pressed the key into her hand.
"No, I know you like to be the one with your hand on the throttle, so to speak, Plus, I like the way you ride. Damn, these double entendres are a big effort and you're not even smiling. Anyway, no shit. You ride as well as I do, or actually better if my honesty overcomes my pride. I really don't mind. For today, anyway. Maybe I could just reserve the right for another occasion.
She touched his cheek like she had the night before. This time he didn't make the mistake of trying to touch her back. Along the way, they stopped to buy new clothes, t-shirts and cargo shorts and hiking sandals, and at an incongruously American diner-looking place where they fueled up on eggs, toast, bacon, and coffee. Their conversation was comfortable, almost banal, considering the events of the night before and what they were facing now. Mostly, they talked about motorcycles and how stupid it was to ride without leathers, but when in Rome and trying to be inconspicuous and all that. She had a passion for Ducatis, and a Street Fighter was her most cherished possession. He was a Harley man and planned one day to own a V-Rod Muscle, though where he lived, a little Honda Rebel was the more practical choice. About a half hour east of Bangkok, they found an internet cafe. Docs went in and paid cash for access, then came back out to the dusty parking area in front. The late morning sun was high in the sky, and Labi was standing next to the Kawasaki in the shade of a lonely palm tree, alongside a mongrel dog sheltering from the heat. Docs joined her. She already had his phone out of the case and handed it to him. Then she walked off, no doubt recognizing that he wouldn't want her listening to his call. He almost told her to stay, but then thought of how Rain would castigate him for being too trusting and decided to just let her go. He looked at the dog, which was watching him. "Hey, Pooch," he said absently. He was surprised at how nervous he was. He didn't believe Kanazaki could have turned on him, but what if he was wrong? He fired up the unit and saw that the Wi-Fi connection was strong enough to reach the lot from inside. Good to go. He brought up signal and made the call. Kanazaki picked up instantly, even though it was the middle of the night over there. "Hey," he said, "I've been waiting to hear from you." "Yeah, well, I'm sure you understand that first with Zatoichi and then after the Pattaya debacle, I needed to make sure I was secure." "I get that. I hope you do. Now, at the outset of this whole thing, you told me you had a hunch Sorum was DIA, a hunch you confirmed. I want to know how you confirmed it, specifically who confirmed it, and how you dialed into what you thought was that Sorum associate's mobile phone, the one that was proof positive Sorum was sheltering in Les Nuits, right in the damn safe room that for me turned out to be anything but. Damn it, Docs, you know I can't. Shut the fuck up, son, because you are not getting it. Last time you gave me this whole song and dance about how Sorum's a DIA asset and you couldn't have me kill a DIA asset. But this time you're not going to be giving up a DIA asset. You're going to be giving up a DIA officer. And if you won't do that, then my problem isn't with DIA, partner. My problem is with you."
A motorcycle buzzed by, a couple of kids riding tandem. Then it was gone, a long dust cloud in its wake, and everything was quiet again. Kanazaki said, "I was afraid you were going to say that."
"Tom, I like you. You know I do. But right now, you should be afraid. Either you got played or you're playing me. There's no other possibility here. I'll tell you the truth. I am really hoping it's door number one, but you need to prove that to me. If you won't, it's your choice and your consequences."
The dog that had been sheltering looked at him warily, then came to its feet and moved off. "All right," Kanazaki said. "My DIA contact is Frank Dillon, the deputy director." Docs felt a huge surge of relief. Yeah, he'd felt nervous, but he hadn't realized just how afraid he'd really been that Kanazaki might stonewall. Still, the specific information made him wary.
"Franklin X. Dillon, the Delta sniper from the Battle of Mogadishu?"
"Yes, that Dillon."
"Well, he's a genuine badass. And outspoken, too, especially for a Delta guy who, in my experience, liked to shoot more than talk. Isn't he the one who did that New York Times interview after the battle, blaming the damn Secretary of Defense himself for the deaths of his comrades for not having provided the requested tanks and armored personnel carriers?"
"Yes," Kanazaki said. "He's famous for that interview, or infamous, depending on who you talk to. It was one of the things that led to Aspen's resignation."
If I'm remembering correctly, he's also famous for inventing some kind of new approach to tank and APC downtime, some modular thing that doubled the ratio of deployment hours to maintenance hours.
Yes, so effectively doubling the number of deployed armored units. He said he'd never forgive himself for not having thought of it before Mogadishu. If he had, our guys might have had the armor they needed, and they wouldn't have been at the mercy of ignorant DC brass. Do you know him, or just by reputation?
Back in the day, I did some training with Delta, but our paths never crossed. What about you?
He's been with DIA for a decade now, and I know him from various joint ops over the years. He's a kind of frenemy. Very smart guy, though I can't say I find him as agreeable as you.
Well, who is?
Anyway, he's the one who confirmed for me, off the record, obviously, that Gant was a DIA case officer and Dillon's subordinate, and who gave me the initial intel I used to place Sorm at Le Nui. All right. He wasn't 100% on Kanazaki, but they at least seemed to be heading in the right direction.
That's a good start, Doc said. Now, here's something you can follow up on. There are 3 dead guys in that club. Well, 6, actually, but 3 of them were locals. Sorm's men, I'd guess. Pawns someone set up outside the VIP room to be sacrificed. But the other 3 were different. When I tossed the flashbang into that room, one of them yelled, "Grenade" in English. Maybe you can find out who they were affiliated with.
Okay, but either way, you're right. It was a setup. It had to be. I'm sorry. I think I've been trying to convince myself it was something else.
Don't you get it, though? It wasn't just me Dillon was setting up. He had to know that if anything went wrong and I walked away, I'd suspect you. On which topic, pardon me, but we're not quite out of the woods yet.
Yeah, I don't know whether the next thing I tell you is going to get us out of the woods or deeper into them, but I wanted you to hear it from me regardless, not see it on the news.
Shit. Don't think about it then, just tell me.
Fennec Van, he was killed yesterday. Docs felt sick.
Oh no.
It was an IED on the corner, not 50 meters from his office in Phnom Penh.
Who did it? You better tell me who did it. Was it Dillon?
Specifically? I don't know. But a safe bet it was DIA. Their man Gant was the one who hired you to eliminate Van in the first place. That didn't work out. This feels like a plan B. Docs realized he was clenching his teeth, and the phone, too. He blew out 2 long breaths and tried to calm himself so he could think clearly. He looked up and saw LaBie watching him from the entrance of the cafe. She looked concerned. He was too far to be overheard, but his body language must have been clear enough.
Maybe a plan B, Doc said, or maybe something improvised. It took some doing to bring me in. Initial contact, meeting with Gant, acquisition of the equipment I requested, and I had to hire local muscle, the ones who were supposed to knife me in the dark after I'd shot Van. It wasn't exactly Operation Overlord, but there were a fair number of moving parts.
Yes, all designed to deploy you as a cutout.
And then to cut out the cutout as soon as the deed was done. It's been only a few days. Either these guys built in safety redundancies better than NASA and had a meticulous plan B already in place.
No, that wouldn't make sense. Because every element of the plan is also a vulnerability, someone who knows too much, an element they might not be able to control. Docs could still feel the rage trying to push through, but focusing on the tactical aspects was helping, for the moment, anyway.
All right, he said. What we're saying is that they got to Van by improvisation. No time for cutouts and all the rest. Direct action, because after things went sideways in Phnom Penh, they were desperate. Which brings us back to the question I asked a minute ago. Who fucking killed Van? That's what you're going to tell me. What you are not going to tell me is how I will or will not handle it.
I'll try to find out. Just give me a little time. Now that the conversation was done, Docs could feel the rage building again.
I'm going to turn off this phone now. I'll check in with you later.
Please, and don't wait so long this time.
Tom, you're in a difficult position, and I appreciate that. But there comes a moment where a man has to choose sides. You can't have it both ways here. You can be a loyal player in your intelligence community, or you can give me what I need to kill Dillon dead, and Sorm with him.
Look,
Remember when I told you the only way to make sense of this crazy world is to know who your real friends are? Well, you need to make a decision about that right now. The organization or your friends. Them or me. That's your choice now, with everything that flows from it.
He clicked off, powered down the phone, and put it back in the shielded case, and paced the parking lot, his sandals kicking up small clouds of dust into the still, hot air. He squeezed his eyes shut and balled his fists and clenched his arms and stomach. He wanted to hurt someone, kill someone. You're going to. You are going to kill some people who need killing. He blew out a few more breaths. When he felt a little more in control, he walked over to LeBee.
What is it?
She said.
They killed the Dalai Lama. Blew him up. Not the actual Dalai Lama. The UN guy I told you about who looked like him. A good man. A really good man.
I'm sorry, Carl.
He realized he was close to tears.
I told him, vary your routes and times. Get rid of your cell phone. I told him he was in danger. And he said, in the scope of the universe and the arc of justice, my life is of little consequence. Well, God damn it, I hope he's happy now.
I'm sorry, she said again.
I should have known he wouldn't listen, but I should have made him. I should have made him.
You tried. You did everything you could.
He looked out at the narrow road running in front of the cafe, gray and rutted and baking under the sun.
You don't know that, and neither do I.
He started to move past her so he could get on the bike, but she held up a hand and pressed her palm to his cheek, stopping him. He stood there for a moment, looking at her, then put his hand over hers. This time, she didn't pull back.
I am going to kill them, he said. Every last fucking one.
She nodded, looking into his eyes.
We both are.
Chapter 25. Livia took them farther north, stopping at a gas stand in the middle of nowhere east of Bangkok's Suvarnabhumi Airport. They were less than an hour from the central business district, but it was quiet out here, the land flat and dotted with shacks and irrigation ditches and small plots of farmland. Livia gassed up the Kawasaki. When she was done, Carl walked over to an old woman perched on a sagging couch on the shady side of the small cinder block building, the owner, it seemed. He pulled two bottled waters from an ice bucket and handed the woman some bot, holding up his hand and refusing when she tried to make change. They took turns in the outhouse, then sat in a pair of plastic chairs under a faded red and white Coca-Cola umbrella set up in the dirt alongside the building. While they drank, Carl told her about the rest of his conversation with his guy. He said he's going to find out who killed Van, he told her. Most likely, that means a former Delta guy named Franklin Dillon, the deputy director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. That's some heavy opposition and maybe heavy blowback. If you don't want to be part of it, I'll miss you, but I'll understand.
She looked at him. You couldn't stop me.
He laughed softly. Yeah, I'm getting that feeling. Not that I'd want to try.
I should check in myself. I would have earlier, but you made a good point about the coastal road being a choke point. I didn't want to turn my phone on until we were close to Bangkok.
She fired up the phone. The moment the call went through, Little picked up.
Livia, he said. Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Why didn't you check in? I have to learn about what happened at the club on CNN and hear nothing from you?
I'm sorry. I was all ready to go when I saw what looked like some kind of confrontation outside a room with three guards in front of it. That's when I asked you to stand by. And then the guards started shooting, and I told you to kill the lights. It was pandemonium after that, and I got out. Do you know anything about what happened?
Not one damn thing, he said. In fact, I have the oddest feeling you know more than you're telling me.
Really? I walked into what turned out to be a shooting gallery, and the only person who knew I was going to be there was you.
What? You think I had something to do with that?
I don't know what to think.
Why in God's name would I want to set you up?
She didn't have an answer to that, and in fact didn't believe Little had anything to do with it. But that hadn't been the point either. The point was to change the trajectory of the conversation from his accusation to her counter-accusation.
I don't know, she said. But on the other hand, I know very little about you other than that you have resources to waste.
You know what I meant by that. Come on, this is insane.
What can you tell me about the people who died at the club?
You don't think I've been trying to find out?
I don't know what you've been doing, but I can give you the information I have, and you can follow up on it.
That would be great, and I'd love to. I only wish you'd done it earlier.
She smiled, glad to have him playing defense.
The guards were Thai.
And then, after the shooting started, a door opened and three men in what looked like black combat or SWAT uniforms and body armor came swarming out. One of them yelled, "Grenade!" in English, and then there was a series of explosions from a flashbang. Then more shooting. After that, I don't know.
Yes, there were six bodies total. From what you're saying, three Thai guards and three foreign operators. It's not much, but I'll see what I can do with it.
Good.
Damn it, Livia. You need to stop looking at me as the enemy. We're a team.
Don't tell me what I need to do, and don't tell me we're a team. Prove it.
You asked me to get you into the club, and I did. What the hell more do you want?
I want to know what happened there.
Well, so far I haven't been able to find out, but maybe what you just belatedly told me will turn out to be useful.
She didn't mind the dig. In fact, if that was the best he could come up with, she knew she'd won. She hadn't wanted to answer his questions, and by leveling accusations of her own, she'd gotten him to forget he even had any.
I hope it will be, she said. I'm going to turn off my phone, but I'll check in again later.
What, you think I'm tracking your phone?
What I think is that my phone is trackable. Are you telling me it isn't?
Why does everything have to be an argument with you?
Why are you always arguing?
Look, I don't have time for a Monty Python sketch. Turn off the phone if you want. If I have anything important to tell you, it'll just wait until you get around to calling me.
She smiled. Like I said, I'll check in later. She powered down the phone and put it back in the Faraday case. Carl said,
Why are handlers always such a pain in the ass?
She shrugged. Just comes with the territory, I guess.
You learn anything?
I think he's up to something. My supervisor sure thinks so, but I don't think he was behind what happened at the club. On that, I think he's as mystified as we are.
What do you think he's up to, then?
She considered that. He sent me over here to decide whether I wanted to be part of a task force, something between Thai and local U.S. law enforcement. But since I got here, he hasn't seemed very concerned about any of that. He seems glad I'm here, though. I'm just not sure why. They were both quiet for a moment. She said, Anyway, the main thing is, what looks most likely right now is that your theory is correct. DIA was behind Pattaya. Your friend didn't set you up. They did.
I hope you're right. We'll see what he has to say for himself when I call him later. But let's get out of here now. Don't want to linger anywhere we've been using the phones. For all I know, those guys will lock in on the signal and send in a damn drone. Those things are scary. I shot one out of the sky once, but it was a near thing and I was a lot better armed than I am at the moment.
Chapter 26 They kept heading north and northwest, sticking to back roads. Docs was surprised, though not unpleasantly, at how quickly he'd gotten used to riding in back. It was actually kind of relaxing. Of course, it would have been a different story if LaBie hadn't been such a competent rider. But she was. And he had to admit, insisting on being in front even in the face of her obvious skill would have been childish. If anyone ever gave him a hard time about it, he'd tell them to take it up with LaBie, who, if she was in the wrong mood at the time, would probably kick their ass. He'd enjoy a backseat view of that, too. They found a business hotel at the outskirts of the airport district. Docs got a room, and they both napped on the king bed. Their clothes were on, and there was no snuggling or anything like it. But still, he felt glad that she was letting him into her space a little. The feeling was paradoxical, because, hell, the night before, she'd let him into her body. But that was the point. She hadn't so much let him in as taken him in. Now, she was letting him, and it was different. When they were awake, he checked in with Kanazaki again.
What have you got for me? He said, afraid again, despite himself, that the answer wouldn't be satisfactory.
But maybe he was wrong, because Kanazaki said, A lot.
Go.
Less than 12 hours after you shot Gant, Dylan was on a plane. Guess where he was going?
I don't want to play guessing games. Just tell me.
Phnom Penh.
And you think he blew up Van while he was there?
I can't prove it, but it's not hard to imagine the sequence. Sorm learns through various contacts, maybe through DIA, in fact, about Van and the sealed indictment. He goes to his case officer, Gant, and says, "You better take care of this." Gant spends days, maybe weeks, putting everything together for you to hit Van. But you hit Gant instead. Now Sorm is having a shit fit. SOP is to have a backup contact if for any reason you lose touch with your case officer. Figure the backup here is Dylan, Gant's superior. Sorm calls Dylan, and now he is really agitated, because the clock is ticking, they've lost time, they've lost Gant, Van is still out there, and worst of all, so is a probably pissed-off former Marine sniper who might just know too much. Dylan says, "Relax, I'm coming to deal with it personally," which he does. Doc's considered. It fit with his general impression that blowing up Van was less a plan B than it was a hasty improvisation, which was his sense about Zatoichi, too. Something else occurred to him. "Hey, you said it was an IED. You sure about that?" "Yes. The blast site and surrounding damage is nothing like what you'd expect from any kind of missile. This was a bomb, already in place. Why, though?" "Well, if it's DIA, why not just make it a drone strike? Why send Dylan and presumably a team all the way to Phnom Penh?" "I think you're looking at it backward. Anybody with even rudimentary training can build and emplace an IED. You can even find recipes on the internet, though the wrong ones will get you blown up. But if you wanted to send in a drone, the logistical tail would be formidable. That's changing fast. The next generation of drones will be the size of dragonflies, with a practically microscopic camera called an optical phased array receiver and embedded micro-explosives, and everything will be decentralized. But right now, if you wanted to deploy a Reaper or whatever to loiter over a target until you could ID him and launch a Hellfire to blow him up, the whole thing would have to be coordinated through Ramstein Air Base in Germany and other locations, too. You'd have a paper trail visible from outer space." That made sense. "So not the kind of thing you could use against a UN official." "Exactly." Something was nagging at him, about Van and Zatoichi both, and it hit him. "I told Van to vary his routes and times. Maybe he listened, maybe he didn't. But Dylan couldn't be sure regardless, and if he was going to emplace an IED, he'd have to know which way and at least around what time Van would be going past it." "That's true, but they might have put, say, two in place to make sure they were covering all the possible routes." "I reconned that area. If I were the one emplacing the device, I would have wanted four separate locations, depending on what entrance or exit the target might use. So now we're talking about not just multiple devices, but multiple spotters, too. And that doesn't feel quite right. They're in a hurry, improvising. And there are cameras on the UN perimeter, too. So even if you emplaced the device far enough away, you'd still be taking chances on having all those spotters conducting initial recon." "What are you thinking, then?" "They had to have some kind of eyes on Van. But from what you just told me about these micro-drones, I mean, how far along are they operationally? Maybe not dragonflies, and forget about the explosives, because that seems not to have been what happened here. But what about the size of a small bird, like a hummingbird, something that could persistently circle at 50 or 100 feet, where no one would ever even see it?" "That kind of drone is very far along." "I'll be damned. That's how they worked it with Zatoichi. I couldn't figure out how he would be coming from the opposite direction. But if they knew my location and direction, he could come from anywhere. And of course, they did know. They knew I'd try to see Van. So it's not as though they had to search for me throughout the entirety of Phnom Penh. They could just fly one of their tiny drones in circles all day long around Van's office. And once I showed up, they could sic Zatoichi on me from any direction they liked."
"And the direction they wanted would have been something other than coming up behind you."
"Right. If I saw him coming up behind me, I might have reacted. Coming from somewhere I hadn't even been seemed like nothing. He might have had me, too, if I hadn't noticed a few anomalies telling me this Zatoichi was a fake."
"I'd say your instinct about all this being improvised after you killed Gant was on the money." Doc wondered whether he'd been saying too much. Maybe he should have let Kanezaki do more of the talking and kept his own speculation to himself. On the other hand, he doubted he was giving away that much by thinking out loud. On the other hand, he supposed it was possible that mostly he was trying to act as if Kanezaki was definitely trustworthy because he wanted so much to believe it.
He decided he didn't care. Still, to send Dylan out to do this personally, or more likely to supervise a team, what the hell is DIA getting from SORM that would make them take these risks? Or, as you put it, what does SORM have on them? Right, or both? I don't know the answer, but I'll tell you who does. Dylan, I get it. Well, if I can ask him, I will. But then again, I'm not really in the mood to talk anymore. I know, and I'm not arguing. Good. There was a pause. Kanazaki said, speaking of which, I have one more bit of intel. It's ambiguous, but maybe you can make sense of it. Tell me. Dylan is meeting SORM tonight. Docs felt a little adrenaline hit move out through him. Where? That's the ambiguous part. At the tents. Does that mean anything to you? Docs considered. Tents in Bangkok could mean one of the night markets, bazaars characterized by hundreds of stalls, each sheltered under a colorful tent. It sounded like Kanazaki's intel tracked Labi's lead about Rot Fai and Serena Karen. It was such welcome news that for an instant, Docs wholeheartedly believed it. But then he forced himself to slow down. How do you know that? Come on, sources and
Bullshit sources and methods, Docs erupted. I do not have time for your sources and methods. You tell me sources and methods, I'm going to think you're playing me. Now, I've been trying, really trying, to give you the benefit of the doubt. But the last so-called intel you gave me was bullshit and almost got me killed. And maybe you don't realize it, but you are this close. I mean this fucking close to having a major problem with me. So you tell me right fucking now how you came by this new intel.
It was a long pause. It felt like capitulation. Docs waited. All right, Kanazaki said. Okay. There was another pause. Finally, Kanazaki said, I'm into the cable traffic of the DIA director himself. Docs shook his head, half pleased, half disgusted.
My lord, if you spent half the time spying on the Chinese and Russians as you do on each other, who knows what you might uncover?
Whatever, now you know.
Now I know what? How do you know this intel is reliable?
Are you joking? The DIA director's own cable traffic?
Hang on a minute. When was the last time you got anything really useful to you, or compromising to them, from this channel?
No response.
Okay, how long have you been doing this? 6 months? 6 years? How long?
Kanazaki sighed. It's been a little under a year.
Okay, in that year, what have you gotten that's truly to your advantage or their detriment?
Well, it's been a little while, but...
Oh, wait, don't tell me. The only real nugget you got was right at the beginning. Am I seeing it clearly now?
There was a pause. Not exactly. I mean, at the outset, there were some difficult negotiations underway between CIA and DIA about a sensitive, far-reaching op and who would run it. What I learned from the cable hack was invaluable to our winning the contract, so to speak.
You see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You cleaned their clock in your sensitive op negotiation pissing contest or whatever it was, and they said, hell, how did old Kanazaki figure out our exact negotiating position and how to end run us? And they examined all their vulnerabilities and maybe found some sign your hackers had left behind. Well, Kanazaki, that wily son of a bitch, they said, he cracked the director's cable traffic. And what did they do next? You tell me, what did they do?
Silence. He realized he'd used Kanazaki's name in front of Labi and said a whole lot of other shit he probably shouldn't have on top of it. The hell with it.
I mean, tell me, he went on. Tell me, have you ever gotten anything valuable after that? Anything earth-shaking? Anything DIA really and truly wouldn't want you to have?
Well, no, but the general background itself is...
Bullshit general background! After the first intrusion, you didn't get shit! Now, they knew you were in there. They knew. So you tell me, why didn't they close that channel down? Would you have expected them to shut down a compromised channel? Would a shutdown be standard practice for you intel community types? Or might you do something else? Tell me, goddammit, I want to hear you say it!
Damn it. They wouldn't shut it down. They'd keep using it.
Exactly! Bingo! Go to the head of the line! They'd keep it and play you with it! They'd feed you false intel you think was real, just like they did about Pattaya and Le Nui, where I almost got fucking killed as a result!
There was a long pause. Kanazaki said, damn it. You're right. I'm sorry.
Shit.
Docs was still hopping mad, but all at once he felt bad, too. He hadn't meant to browbeat the man like that. Not exactly. It was just, He realized he'd been so afraid Kanazaki wouldn't be able to persuade him he was still trustworthy.
All right, all right. I'm sorry for getting so disagreeable.
You have nothing to apologize for. They've been playing me. I should have seen it, and I didn't. And I almost got you killed as a result.
Well, on the one hand, that's all true. But on the other hand, no harm, no foul, right? Life's full of lessons, and this one came fairly cheap compared to the alternatives.
I guess. Damn, he sounded so morose.
Anyway, Doc said, looking for a way to get him back in the game, this is actually good news, isn't it? Because,
I know, I get it. Because when I knew, but they didn't know I knew, that was good. But when they knew that I knew, but I didn't know they knew, that was bad. But now that I know they know that I know, and they don't know it, it's good again.
That was actually a little hard to follow, but it sounded about right. It's something like that, yeah. The thing is, DIA is playing you again, and they think they're getting away with it. But now you know better, and that gives us the advantage. He who laughs last, laughs best, isn't that true?
I'm sorry, Docs. I don't know how I missed this.
Well, that's a conversation for another time. For now, I'll just say maybe you place too much residual faith in your community. For you, these intel squabbles are a contact sport. But for the other guys, it's no game. You're a good man, and you projected your values onto some people who weren't worthy of it. Now you know better. And I know it hurts to have the scales fall from your eyes, but at least now you can see clearly, right?
I'm not crazy about the view, but
yeah. The view is the view, son. You have to see it clearly if you don't want to start bumping into things.
All right, I think we've beaten this metaphor to death.
Docs laughed, glad the man seemed to be rallying. Now, tell me exactly what that cable said. And this was, what, Dylan briefing the director?
Yes. It said, I'm meeting Red tonight at the tents to review the trade.
Red?
Yes, probably a reference to Sorm's Khmer Rouge past. We're not always as clever with pseudonyms as we should be.
And what's the trade?
I'm not sure. Maybe some aspect of what they get from Sorm and what they give him in return. Or it's just bullshit because, as you've persuasively argued, they know I'm into that channel of cable traffic.
Anything else in the cable?
Yes. Dylan says he told Red to get a new phone and under no circumstances to use any unit he'd ever used before or that could otherwise be associated with him. He told him to leave the new unit off until he was at the tents. Then he should use it to call Dylan and tell Dylan where they should meet.
If that's true, it means Sorm has Dylan's number and we can expect him to use it. Maybe something you can key on. But do you think he really told Sorm all that?
Hard to say. He might have, or it might have been entirely for our benefit, or some combination.
Judging from the way old Gant played me, I think it's safe to say these guys hide their lies and as much truth as possible. My guess is it's both true and for our benefit.
Meaning?
I don't know yet. I need to think about it. This you know that I know that you know stuff gets confusing.
Kanazaki chuckled. Now, what do you make of the tents? You must have some idea because it's the one thing you haven't asked about. Docs hesitated. He still hadn't fully decided on whether Kanazaki was playing him. He didn't think so, but... And then he decided that for the moment, he had to at least act as if he trusted him. He could always abort later if he changed his mind.
I have reason to believe the tents is a reference to the Srinakaran Ratfi night market.
What reason?
Sources and methods, son. Sources and methods.
That's cold, but I guess I deserve it. Docs chuckled.
Anyway, let me do a little thinking on all we just talked about, and I'll call you later.
I'll be standing by. Docs ended the call and returned the phone to the Faraday case. He briefed LaBie on the conversation. She'd heard most of it anyway.
His information tracks with mine, she said when he was through.
He nodded. Maybe.
But you don't like it.
He tried to piece together what was bothering him. Some of it felt obvious, but some of it... less so. He decided to start with the first, hoping doing so would shed some light on the second.
Yeah, the thing about the night market sounds good and it tracks with your lead. But still, it's coming from...
Well, you already heard me say his name.
You were upset.
Yeah, I sure was.
Why don't we just call him K?
My guy was always a little awkward anyway.
He laughed. Okay, fair enough.
And by the way, my guy is Special Agent B.D. Little, Homeland Security Investigations.
He looked at her. You didn't have to tell me that.
She shrugged. I know he's using me, though I still don't know exactly how. And besides, I like what you said to Kay about how the only way to make sense of things is to know who your real friends are. I haven't had many friends, but...
Her voice trailed off and she looked away. He wanted to reach for her hand, but thought maybe it would be too much.
Hey, he said, you know I feel the same.
She nodded. To save her further discomfort, he went on. In a way, if Kay set me up before, he could be doing the same thing again. When I first asked him for help, he claimed to be twitchy about killing a DIA asset, but maybe that was all bullshit. Maybe he was protecting Sorm for his own reasons. I can't shake this feeling we're going to show up at the night market and it'll be just like Bataille all over again.
She looked at him, seemingly back in control of herself. What do your instincts tell you?
He considered. He wouldn't do it. Couldn't. It's not who he is.
Then haven't your instincts always been reliable before?
For a moment, he thought of Tiara. Well, maybe there was this one time, but that's not really relevant to what we're talking about here.
So the answer is yes. Your instincts have always been reliable before.
He nodded. Yeah, that's true.
Then that's your answer. Kay isn't lying. Your instincts are right. You should trust them, the way you always have.
He chewed on that. He knew she was right. He didn't think Kanazaki was setting him up. But something was still bugging him. He just couldn't figure out what it was. Let's get, he said. All this talk of drone strikes makes me twitchy. Plus, I think it's past time you and I had a little conversation with the night market's most reprehensible denizen, Mr. Udon Leek Pie.
Chapter 27 2 hours later, Carl and Livia were sitting in the shade of a corrugated awning at a place called Best Friend Bar 10, each with an ice-cold bottle of Chang in front of them. Carl had told her about a guy in Bangkok he had met through Kanazaki, a guy named Fallon who Carl said was all right. She wasn't entirely sure what that meant, but was learning to trust his occasional understatements and the judgment behind them. Carl had texted the guy, if you're available, I'd be grateful to meet you again ASAP at the same place as last time, Semper Fi. The guy had immediately texted back that he would be there in 2 hours. They'd barely had time to sip their beers when a solid-looking white guy of maybe 60 in aviator shades came around the corner. He nodded when he saw them, then glanced left and right, perhaps a little surprised that Carl wasn't alone. Carl waved, then said to the bartender, "A singha for my friend, sir. Thank you." Fallon stopped at the stool alongside Carl, which put Carl in the middle. Livia moved her stool back, and Carl spun around. Now they could all see each other. Fallon took off his shades and set them on the bar. He looked at Livia, then at Docs.
Well, he said, I'm glad not all your stories are sad ones.
Carl laughed and they shook. The bartender put a singha on the bar in front of Fallon, who took a big swallow.
Fallon, Carl said, meet LaBee. LaBee, Fallon.
They shook. He had a good grip.
LaBee and I have found ourselves in a bit of a pickle. And to resolve it, we were planning to have a private conversation with a certain Thai gentleman who may not speak English. We would thus like to avail ourselves of your translation services and possibly some of the other services I'm hoping might fall under the general heading of tips, tours, and trips.
Fallon sipped his beer.
Does this have anything to do with our mutual friend?
Indirectly, yes.
Because I would have expected him to get in touch himself.
Well, I could have done it that way, but it would have taken more time, of which we don't have a lot. Plus, there again, you were kind enough to give me your card.
Fallon didn't respond.
Let me put it this way, Carl went on. Had I shared LaBee's and my plans with Kanazaki, whose name LaBee is at this point familiar with, I have no doubt he would have approved. But nor did I see any need to burden him.
Fallon nodded, seemingly unfazed about Livia knowing Kanazaki's name. Maybe he figured if there was a problem, it was on Carl.
That's fair. If I'm going to get involved, though,
I have to ask why you think Kanazaki would have approved.
Because Kanazaki, as I'm sure you know, is one of the good guys, and the Thai gentleman we aim to speak with is most assuredly not.
Livia was getting tired of all the circumlocutions. His name is Leek Pie, she said. He sells children to rapists. If that's something you'd like to stop, then you should help us. If you don't care, then we don't need your help, or want it.